You're listening to Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno, supported by Homewatch Caregivers, whose mission is to preserve dignity, protect independence, and provide peace of mind for their clients and loved ones by providing exceptional home care.
97.9 FM WCHL is pleased to present Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno. Nicole has over 15 years of experience as a geriatric social worker and administrator, working in the long-term care industry to include skilled nursing care, Alzheimer's care, adult daycare, and home care. She also worked as a family caregiver. In addition, Nicole co-founded a nonprofit in the Triangle that specializes in support for caregivers. Now, Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Caring Connections on WCHL. Today, we will be discussing the MOST form. Joining us today is Deborah Love, Clinical Ethics Outreach Partner for the UNC Center for Bioethics. Welcome, Deborah.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So we've had some people come on the show before, really in the scope of talking about advanced directives and dabbled a little bit in the MOST form, but okay. I'm really excited today to really dive into this form and why it was developed. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, the MOST is a way for patients who have a known advanced illness or advanced dementia to make sure that their wishes for care at end of life are honored across all sites of care.
Okay.
And when I say about wishes about end of life care, what I really mean is the level of treatment that will be used or not according to their personal preferences.
Okay.
So, as you know, we have a lot of technology that we can bring to bear.
Mm-hmm.
We can sustain life for a long time.
Yes.
And often that's done without a lot of attention to the quality of life.
Okay.
And as I'm sure you probably know and some of your listeners know, that once you get on the treatment train, sometimes it's hard to get off that train.
It sure
it's hard to know when to say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we advocate that you know that best is by talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about it before things get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons why the MOST approach was developed is because we really have known for a long time that we don't do a very good job in our country of helping people through the dying process.
Mm-hmm.
We know that somewhere between 70 and 90% of people say that they would rather die at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not how it happens in our country.
No.
In our state, over 50% of people die in the hospital, and many times that's hooked up to machines.
So when you say die in the home, are you talking about where they call home, even if it's assisted living?
Exactly, wherever they call home. And 22% of the people in our state die in nursing homes.
Okay.
And for some people, that is a home.
Right.
But for some people, that's a place that they've been sent as part of this treatment train.
Okay.
And so this is a way for people to really clarify what their values and preferences are about what's important to them.
So if we can back up just for a second, what does MOST stand for?
MOST stands for Medical Orders for Scope of Treatment.
And I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, MOST is the most of what you want to have happen to you. Is that correct?
Well, it's specifying how much treatment that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the best way to look at that would be to go through the form.
Sure, that'd be great.
And talk about what are the elements and
Definitely.
Components of this form.
Definitely.
So the first thing to notice about it is that it's a bright pink form.
Okay.
Right?
So only valid if it's a bright pink form? Is that where we start?
Well, it can be used in copies under certain circumstances.
Okay.
But it's meant to get people's attention.
Okay.
And so what we say is that once it's completed, it should be prominently displayed on the refrigerator or over someone's bed or wherever it can be seen.
Does this form take the place of a DNR?
Well, it can.
Okay.
It, because it does address those issues.
Okay.
So it can replace the DNR.
Okay.
There are some advantages, I think, to this form over the When you say DNR, I'm assuming
the
portable, yes. Portable DNR. The yellow portable DNR is signed by a physician. It doesn't need to be signed by a patient or their family member.
Okay.
And so this form will be signed by either a patient or their representative.
Okay.
And by a physician or a nurse practitioner or a PA.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about the elements of this form.
Okay.
Before I do that, let me back up and say what's really important before you get to the form is the conversation that you have with the person for whom the form is being completed.
Mm-hmm.
So every person has different values and preferences about what life means to them, mm-hmm. about what's important to them.
Right.
About, you know, whether being able to interact with family mm-hmm. is an important thing for them. About whether they want to avoid suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are willing to take a little bit more pain in exchange for being able to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to avoid pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to know what your family member wants. And so we really put the emphasis on that conversation first and foremost.
In your notes, you commented something about the fact that this is a form for people who are suffering chronic conditions towards the end of life.
Right.
So this, it would seem to me, and I know you're going to go over the form in a second, but that you really need to have these conversations when a person is probably in a better state, physical state, earlier on in life, even though the form can't be filled out till later. Would that be inaccurate?
Right. This form is intended for people who have a life-limiting illness and they know that they do,
mm-hmm.
or advanced dementia. What we say is it's appropriate if you would say that this person, you wouldn't be surprised if they were to die within a year.
Okay.
That's the appropriateness of this form. As contrasted with a healthcare power of attorney or a living mm-hmm. will that anybody who's over 18 could complete,
sure.
it might be appropriate.
And should.
Right. Well,
yeah.
certainly
yeah.
a healthcare power of attorney.
Yeah.
But this is when we know that the end is coming.
Okay.
And we want to say, how would we like that to be?
Okay.
And as I said, that's different for every person.
Sure.
So, for instance, I know of one person whose father was a really brilliant physician mm-hmm. and researcher, and she would have thought having his mental faculties and being able to communicate and interact and read was important.
Well, we are going to take a short break. I am here today with Deborah Love talking about the MOST form, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Deborah Love on WCHL, talking about the MOST form, and I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. Welcome back, Deborah.
Well, glad to be here again.
So before we took a break, we're starting to talk about the MOST form, and you were about to go over the different areas of the form to mm-hmm. make our viewers a little bit more educated. If you wouldn't mind going through that with us, that would be wonderful.
I'd be happy to. As I said, it's a bright pink form.
Yes. And if you could only see it, you would need sunglasses.
Right. Exactly. Sort of neon pink.
Yes.
The first part of the form has the patient's name and birth date and the effective date of the form, and that's a required part of completing the form.
Okay.
The next section, Section A, deals with cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And there are two questions there.
Which is often in a CPR more commonly.
CPR,
yeah.
Right. And there are two questions there. Do you want it attempted or do you not want it attempted? And I would say that this only applies when the person has no pulse and is not breathing. And I think this is an important question, but it's not the only question.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there's a lot of misunderstanding around cardiopulmonary resuscitation, mm-hmm. and that is because of TV.
Mm-hmm.
TV tells us that research shows that in 70% of cases, people recover and mm-hmm. everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the case in real life. Mm-hmm. I mean, for you and I,
maybe.
The chances of what might be 17%, okay?
Yeah.
And for somebody who's with these advanced illnesses or the frail elderly, it's more like 1 to 3%. And that's survival to discharge.
Yes.
That's not saying that they're going to be fully functional again.
Yes, from what I've heard from some physicians, if you've actually seen it done on a person who is frail and elderly, it's a whole different.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Right. So the next section deals with the scope of treatment that the patient would want. And this is when they have a pulse or they're breathing, but they're in distress.
Okay.
And there are three choices there. One is full scope of treatment, and that's using intubation and ventilation and shocking the heart if necessary. And that's saying transfer to the hospital if that's needed. Okay. The second choice is limited interventions. So you might use some medical treatments, some fluids, some cardiac monitoring. You would not use intubation or ventilation, mechanical ventilation, but you transfer to the hospital if it's appropriate.
Okay.
And then the third area is comfort measures. Now, we always provide comfort measures, but sometimes that's the focus of what we want to provide.
Okay.
We're going to keep the person warm. We're going to keep them dry. We're going to provide medication. We're going to provide wound care. And they would only go to the hospital if that's the only place that we can provide comfort.
If it just couldn't be managed at home.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's part two, or part B. Part C deals with antibiotics, and that's, do you want antibiotics if life can be prolonged? Do you want to have a limitation, perhaps, when there's an infection? Or do you want no antibiotics at all? Okay. And then Section D deals with medically administered fluid and hydration, sometimes called artificial nutrition and hydration. And so there's a section there where you can, again, specify, do you want fluids? Do you want feeding tube? And again, there's three levels of choices for each of those. And then finally, Section E is where the provider signs. Again, that's a physician or a PA or a nurse practitioner.
Okay.
And when they do that, they also say who this was discussed with.
Okay.
Was it discussed with the patient or was it discussed with some other representative of the patient? So those are the main components and main choices of this form. So you can see it provides a really a lot of nuances and a lot of different combinations of choices.
So why this and not a living will?
Well, the main benefit of this is that it translates across sites of care. It is a medical order.
Okay.
A living will is intended to express people's wishes, which could happen at any time.
Sure.
I mean, I could have a living will now. I do have a living will. So that's just me sort of guessing what I would want in a particular situation. And it can't be honored outside of a place where it can be translated into a medical order. So if an EMT is called to the site, you can't wave the living will at them and say, here, honor my living will.
I had that exact experience with my grandfather. I was
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I was caring for him in upstate New York.
Okay.
He was living with me. I was his primary caregiver, and he woke up one morning with what appeared to be kind of like delirium, and he had a chest cold, and I'd brought him to the doctor multiple times, and I said, I think he has pneumonia. I think he has pneumonia. No, he doesn't have pneumonia. No, he doesn't. And then finally, they said, oh, yeah, we think he has pneumonia. And he got very sick from it. And one morning he woke up and he started trying to eat his hearing aids. Now, he was completely alert and oriented normally. And so I knew there was something was really off. So I called the EMT. They came and they took a full report. At the time, I had just had my second child. She was a newborn. And I said, I will be, I just have to feed the baby. I will be right behind you. And, you know, and I told them all, you know, I gave them copies of all the advanced directives, what he wanted, what he didn't want it. He did not want to be intubated. He did not want any of those things. I got to the hospital and everything had been done to him. Everything had been done. And to undo, as you said, once you're on that train,
it's
what had been
hard.
Done, it was very hard. And he got to a point where he had rallied some after days and days on with this treatment because they wouldn't take it out once they put it in. And then he was cognitive enough, and they made me sit there with him and say, if when they pull this out, do you want it back in? And he shrugged his shoulders, which was, oh, dear. Mm. So then I said, you need to make a decision here, Grandpa. And he, with two physician witnesses and a nurse and myself, he said no. But, you know, I have a feeling if there was a form like that, perhaps, and it was honored, that we
could have avoided that
whole, I mean, right. this went on for almost 4 weeks in the hospital.
Oh, so
it was a very long road.
And it is very hard mm-hmm. to withdraw treatment, even though you knew mm-hmm. that person didn't want it mm-hmm. to begin with.
Oh, they didn't want to withdraw because they felt like it was reversible.
Right.
And so that was the whole issue we were having in intensive care unit in this hospital in upstate New York.
So this is just a fabulous story mm-hmm. and a really great illustration of mm-hmm. where this would have been a benefit. Because there's a good reason why we don't have people who are first responders trying to interpret a mm-hmm. living will, because there is the question of reversibility, and they're not in a position to be able to make that decision.
Well, we are actually up to our next break, and I'm here today with Deborah Love talking about the MOST form, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Deborah Love talking about the MOST form on WCHL, and I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. Well, we were just talking a little bit about the form in actuality and a little example of a situation I had where I think perhaps the MOST form would have saved me a lot of heartache and a headache for sure. But my question to you is this form recognized anywhere, everywhere? Because it doesn't seem like everybody knows about it.
Well, I have to say it is still new in terms of being adopted into standards of practice in our state. That's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why we've created this North Carolina Partnership for Compassionate Care, so that we can help educate providers across the state. Mm-hmm. However, when it's presented at an institution, I would say most of them do follow it. There are some who might say, I'm not going to accept this as the medical order of treatment, mm-hmm. but what I will do is accept this as an expression of the patient's wishes, well-considered wishes, and translate that into my own medical order to reflect that.
Okay. So what happens if you end up at a place where it's not recognized? Where do we go from there?
Well, if you want, for instance, to talk to your physician about this and your physician isn't familiar with the form, mm-hmm. please contact me. You can contact me at the university at 919-843-4737.
Why don't you give us that number again?
919-843-4737.
Okay.
Or my email, which is Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, _love, L-O-V-E, at med.unc.edu. And I can bring some resources to bear to be able to talk to and educate that physician and help you make sure you're hooked up with the right folks to make that happen.
Wonderful. Any parting thoughts about your work with the coalition?
Well, just to say that we are developing a number of regional coalitions across the state mm-hmm. so that we can educate the public as well as providers, not only about MOST, but about the importance of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So that's the most important thing to me, to have that conversation ahead of time, as you had with your grandfather.
It is so much easier to do it beforehand than it is in the throes
exactly.
of the crisis. I've seen it go both ways, and I've also heard there's been many of an argument in a hospital waiting room with everyone trying to figure out what mom wanted.
Yeah.
And this certainly would
this is
that.
About honoring wishes, and we can't honor them if we don't know what they are.
That's right. Well, thank you for joining Deborah Love and I today as we discuss the MOST form on WCHL. And as always, you may email your caregiving issues to caring@1360wchl.com.
The purpose of Caring Connections is to educate listeners to help improve the quality of life for families, for professional caregivers, as well as those people affected with Alzheimer's disease.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno is supported by Home Watch Caregivers. You can hear this and any other program of Caring Connections on WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Be sure to email questions to caring@1360wchl.com. Caring Connections, is a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.